It's no accident I was talking about green shoots with the master gardeners in the room. See, some of us are still waiting for a true hard freeze, but growing season is over. It's time to sit back and wait for winter to end. Or not, as the case may be. There are things we can be doing to tend to gardens and growing areas to get ready for next spring. Today's guests are uniquely positioned to guide us through the actions. We have three guests in the studio. Rianna Symes is from Oregon State University's Master Gardener Program, where she's the program coordinator in Jackson County. Rianna, thanks for joining us in the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi, glad to be here. Thank you.
We have Scott Goode with us as well, also a Master Gardener. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you, Jeff. Good to be here.
And Chris Herrild is here as well, H-J-E-R-R-I-L-D. It was kind of a dare to see which person's name I could mispronounce the worst. And I actually got Chris's right. So, Chris, thanks for joining us as well.
You're very welcome.
Now, I understand you're a master composter.
I don't know how much of a master I am, but but I'm getting better every year.
Are there different levels of expertise between the three of you? I mean, different areas of focus?
Definitely. I've studied a long time. I've worked in a lot of horticultural settings, so worked in nurseries for years, landscaping for years, and so I'm a plant nerd who loves soil, and I've learned a lot here from my mentor, Scott Goode.
Yes, and I'm a retired soil scientist and more in environmental engineering in the past, but now I've had the opportunity to work and do some teaching out at OSU in soil sciences.
That's really interesting. So you did environmental engineering. What kinds of environmental engineering?
Well, largely what we did is tracked how pollutants in groundwater interacted with soils and the geology and so forth, and whether or not those plumes would be absorbed onto the soils and geology, or whether they'd move downstream and cause problems for other people.
Is there a consistent answer there? Or did it differ from substance to substance and soil to soil?
Tremendously. Mm-hmm. Varies tremendously.
So you're now tending to gardens and taking some of the soil science you got all those years and putting it to work to grow things?
That's correct. It turns out that nutrients work pretty much the same way as any other thing in the soil. But our big focus now is in building really strong biology in the soil. It turns out that fungi and bacteria and microarthropods and things like that are really so involved in delivering nutrients to the plants and protecting plants from pathogenic or bad organisms in the soil. So really a lot of our focus is in building life in the soil.
We come a long way from the days when we wanted everything nice and clean and sterile. The fact is you kind of want some other things riding along.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And a lot of that has to do with the emergence of no-till agriculture, where we try to keep the soil horizons intact because they are, in fact, an ecology, a very complex ecology. And it needs to remain intact and for all the different critters to find their locations and interact with each other. So the whole idea of rototilling or plowing and stuff is really largely falling out of favor nowadays. And it turns out there are some techniques that have been around for literally thousands of years that really make a big difference in the quality of the gardens and other crops that you can develop.
This strikes me as similar to the way we have learned about the bugs in our bodies, you know, all the bacteria that we need to have around, the microbiome, we're starting to call it on a regular basis now. So the fact that we need to have a lot of stuff going on. And so, Rianna, has it been quite an education for you to get into all this deeper?
It is. And I mean, and actually, this is an emerging science that only 1% of microorganisms in the soil have even been identified. That the European Union's Joint Research Center talks about that the soil is one of the largest reservoirs of biodiversity in the world and actually contains 1/3 of all living organisms. And so this is an emerging science. This is still cutting edge. It hasn't been very long that even science is acknowledging that this universe under our feet is one important, but also alive and has a role to play in our well-being, in our health, and in our food production. So this is still very cutting edge.
Chris Herrild, how long have you been involved with gardening and the soil?
Well, I've been involved for about 40 years. Mm-hmm. I've been in Master Gardeners for 4 years.
Really?
But that's the first thing I did when I retired. Signed right up.
Retired from what?
Well, I was working at 3M, Kodak.
Carestream, whatever its name
all
was
of
this
those.
Week, right?
Yeah, it was all the same company, but...
Mm-hmm. All right. So I was just curious if it had anything to do with what you ended up doing as with Scott. And apparently not.
No.
You didn't deal with a lot of gardening at a plant that made film for X-ray machines and things like that.
No.
So, when you got into Master Gardeners, what were some of the things that immediately changed about things you might have thought about gardening? I'm curious to know from the standpoint of a recent, a newcomer to gardening, what you learned out there.
Well, I'm not really a newcomer to gardening.
Okay.
I mean, I followed my daddy around from the time I was 6 or 7, but discovering how much I did not know was extremely enlightening to me.
Mm-hmm.
And finding directions that I wanted to go in and concentrate on.
What were some of the biggest surprises about the things you thought you did know and didn't?
He was one of the first people who got Rodale's book on composting, and
mm-hmm.
so I've been composting for a long time,
mm-hmm.
but it's much more complex than I ever understood, and composting feeds the soil. The plants get fed by the soil, so
it's an endless cycle.
Endless.
All this stuff bound up together. All right, we'll talk more about gardening and the soil with our guests, Chris Harold, Rianna Symes, and Scott Goode. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange on the other side of a break. We'll be happy to take your calls and emails. 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. Back in the garden with the Master Gardeners on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 15. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking about gardening in the wintertime. It is done, it can be done, and in some cases it should be done. We're talking to folks in the Master Gardeners Association in Jackson County, including Master Gardeners Coordinator Rianna Symes and Master Gardeners Chris Harold and Scott Goode. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I do see that you have the Winter Dreams Summer Garden Symposium coming up on Saturday at the Higher Education Center in downtown Medford. Rianna, what goes on at that?
Gosh, it's a really fun event. We have one day of classes where you can sign. You have a lot of classes to choose from that, exactly like you're talking about, help you know what to plant for the winter, will help you with your soil, with composting, with your raised beds, help encourage beneficials or monarchs in your garden. Huge diversity of classes, lunches included, and this year we're featuring a seed swap. So if you bring in seeds that you've saved, that there's an opportunity to share with other folks there. We'll also have some really neat displays up about how to save different types of seed and about lasagna gardening, about how to layer the soil to encourage the type of life we're talking about in the soil. It's a great event. It's really fun.
You don't have to be a master gardener to come to this event.
Oh, no. We encourage members from the community to come. We're also offering continuing education credits for folks who are in the industry, who need those. Arborists, landscapers alike can come and get those continuing education credits as well.
Now that I remember to ask, Master Gardener training actually starts pretty early in the year, doesn't it?
It does. We're actually, Jackson County Master Gardener Program is accepting applications. The program starts January 20th and generally fills by the end of November. It's pretty competitive. And it's going to be a really fun program this year. We're really highlighting a lot more hands-on experiences, and it's really one of the most fun educational experiences I've had.
And how many people can fit into the class?
About 65.
65 each year then. Okay. And that's it, just once a year, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yep. And then we have conferences and evening classes or classes on the weekends, classes at our spring fair in early May. But this is the time where if you want to really learn how to work in a greenhouse, grow your own food, and really learn how to kind of take your gardening knowledge to the next level, this is where to go. I have a master's in education and in botany,
mm-hmm.
but this is the Master Gardener program is where I went to really learn how to start seeds, to learn about propagation, learn about how to manage a greenhouse and grow my own food. So,
for any of you, what should be happening at this time of year? If you've just taken all the stuff and you've gotten good things to eat out of your garden or anything, or you're thinking about starting one next year and you didn't have one before, what are some of the very basic rudimentary steps that should be taking place now?
Well, one of the first things is you want to get last year's vegetation off of the ground and into a compost pile. It's better to compost it in a compost pile where it'll get hot, so if there are any diseases or anything, bugs left in it, they've pretty well cooked through the winter, and you have nice, fresh compost in the spring. The next thing you'd want to do is to take a soil test and find out what the critical thing is, what your nitrogen is in the soil. Nitrogen doesn't last very long. It goes out of the soil very, very easily. And so you generally have to apply nitrogen every year. And there are some really good nitrogen additives that you put in the fall, feather meal and alfalfa pellets and things like that. And they really take all winter long to break down, be digested by the microorganisms in the soil, and then made available to the plants in spring. So if you do that in the fall, you're all ready to go in the spring as far as your nutrients. The other thing you can do is to put on winter cover crops. Fava beans are famous. They'll grow just fine all the way through the winter. And in the spring, they begin to blossom. Just as they're starting to blossom, if you dig those into your soil, they carry a tremendous amount of nitrogen in them, just as plants. And they have nitrogen-fixing bacteria that grow, nitrogen-fixing organisms that grow in the roots that will pull nitrogen out of the air and put it into the soil. So in many cases, you can generate all of the nitrogen that you need for your garden just by your cover crops. So fava beans, Austrian winter pea, alfalfa, these are things that you can put in and get a real jump start on spring.
And they will grow even through freezing weather?
Absolutely. They grow just fine through the winter. Our winters here are mild enough that really they'll do just fine. Parsley's another one that grows nicely through the winter. If you want a good, vital, nutrient-filled green for the winter time, parsley would do just fine.
Is this limited to the Rogue Valley floor, though? I mean, above 2,000 feet or maybe
actually,
north of Roseburg?
Actually,
something?
Above 2,000 feet, it grows better because you're out of the freezing fog.
Oh, really?
Absolutely.
Garlic is another crop to consider. Garlic is a great winter crop here that can be grown, all the way high elevation. It likes to be mulched, as the tops are about 3 inches, so providing that kind of buffer from the freeze-thaw. But, garlic is a great winter crop here that then in early June you'll be ready to harvest your own garlic.
So should this stuff have been planted already? Is it still a good time to plant it now?
This is a great time to plant. Usually we tell folks to plant garlic between Halloween and Thanksgiving. So try to get it in before you eat that big meal, and you'll still have the energy to do it.
You'll have garlic available for meals next summer.
Exactly.
Right, and the fava beans are edible, too. And it sounds like most of the stuff, with the possible exception for humans of alfalfa, is all edible cover crops.
Well, the Austrian snow pea or winter pea doesn't really produce, peas like you would find garden peas. It's pretty much a cover crop. But yes, the fava beans, will produce very well.
Hmm. I want to get back into some of the composting and mulching parts of things, and I'll bring Chris Harold into this part of the conversation, because we were talking about you want to make sure that the compost gets nice and warm and kills bacteria. What's going on in there when compost is happening?
You have a bunch of microorganisms. If you have the proper proportion of carbon and nitrogen in your compost pile, it gets hot, and it's microorganisms chomping on the ingredients and creating heat. You could get to 160 degrees in 2 days, which kills pathogens and kills weed seeds and that sort of thing.
And it'll even break down some chemicals in the soils as well. So,
Okay, so you're talking about, for example, taking all the stuff that grew in the garden this year and making sure that goes into compost. We're talking like the rotary compost things or the tower kind, or does it really matter?
No, there's a number of ways that you can make it. You can make a pile just freestanding if you wish, but it's vulnerable to critters, particularly if you're putting kitchen scraps in the middle of it or something like that.
You're going to see some raccoons if you do that number,
you
right?
You bet.
All right, so cover crops for sure. Tell us, we'll come back to the soil scientist here, Scott Goode, and tell us a bit about the importance of nitrogen and the whole growing process.
Well, nitrogen is really the fuel that drives the metabolism in plants that allows them to build tissues that then perform photosynthesis and form flowers and then fruit. So nitrogen is extremely important in vegetative growth, in growing leaves and stems and so forth. As the plants move on later into the season and begin to flower and produce fruit, they need more phosphorus. Mm. So those are the two balances. If you put phosphorus in too early, then you will push the plant from being forming vegetation into beginning flowering. And if that's too early, then perhaps the season isn't far enough along, particularly with peppers and tomatoes, things that really love the heat to get going. You want to make sure they get plenty of vegetative growth, so there's plenty of leaves to collect that sunshine, turn it into the sugars that the plants need.
Scott Goode, Chris Harold, and Rihanna Symes are our guests on the Jefferson Exchange, all master gardeners in Jackson County. We're talking about winter gardening and the things you need to do to get ready for the growing season next year. The fact is you can grow stuff now, as we've been learning. We're also talking about the Winter Dreams Summer Garden Symposium coming up on Saturday, 9 to 4:30 at the Higher Education Center in Medford. You can join us with questions or comments about gardening and growing right here, right now. 800-838-3760 by phone anywhere in the listening area. And our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. I'm still struck, Rihanna, by you telling us that you have a degree in botany, but that it sounds like you really got your good stuff about how to work that knowledge into the soil in the Master Gardener program.
Exactly. I think that that's really one of the strengths of the OSU Extension Service, is it's about applied science, applied learning. I was always really frustrated in my botany classes when we were doing experiments about nutrient deficiencies on sugar snap peas, and the professor never mentioned that was a good time to plant them. I was like, wait, but we can be doing this ourselves. And, you know, part of botany is discovering the mystery and the science of plants, but then it also is helping people in the Master Gardener program. It's about helping people connect in with that intrinsic desire to work with plants and to work with the natural world, to integrate that into our homes. We often teach our classes saying, okay, this is all great information, but what can someone do with this on a Sunday? What am I going to go out at my own house and do with this information on a Sunday? Like we're mentioning here today, we're trying to give the listeners ideas of things they can plant that don't take a lot of effort, that don't take a lot of water, that literally if you just put these things in the ground over the winter, they will do very well here. That's the kind of learning we like to provide, not only at the Extension Service, but specifically in the Master Gardener program.
If you're doing winter cover crops, will there need to be much tending of those? I guess I'm keeping the lazy gardener myself in mind, you know, somebody who's likely to just throw the leaves over the raised bed, walk away and call it good for a couple of months. I mean, will the winter cover crops require much tending?
Very little. It's sort of critical that before you plant them, you come through and gently cultivate. You know, this time of the year, we get these early rains and you get all of these emerging seedlings of weed seedlings that come out. Well, you know, one way of looking at that is, oh, no, there's weeds. If you go out with a simple cultivator or a hoe, and while they're tiny, just work them into the soil, that is feeding the worms and the other critters, and it's a huge boon to the garden. And if you do that, you'll knock back those things, and particularly as your winter crops are emerging, let them get up about 2 or 3 inches, and then you can just back away. And you were mentioning putting leaves over the garden. That's a wonderful thing to do. Mm-hmm. It keeps your soil temperatures up. It really feeds the microbes and particularly the worms that rise up to the to the surface of the soil. It suppresses the weeds, and it makes a nice cozy little slipper for all of the plants that you have planted in the garden.
Are there some leaves you want to avoid, though? I understand Photinia, for example, can be fairly acidic.
Well, and also one of the real tough ones is black walnut. Black walnut has some chemicals in it that suppress the growth of anything that's growing, you know, underneath the black walnut tree. And so you don't want to move that into your soils.
Now, you had talked at the very outset about no-till agriculture. So has the approach to just home gardening even changed a lot in recent years, Rianna?
It really has. You know, the Natural Resources Conservation Service and leading soil scientists are really discovering, as Scott mentioned, the importance and significance of the life in the soil. And so they're realizing the implications of what happens if you chop them up or disturb the natural layers that occur in the soil. So they're realizing that minimizing tillage, reducing the amount that we plow the soil, we learned these lessons in the Dust Bowl when they saw our topsoil blowing away. And they realize it's actually an issue of national security, of national well-being, to say, gosh, the soil is what will sustain us all, and it's one of the most important resources we have. And so how can we protect it? How can we help the water connect with it? How can we honor that life that lives in the soil that makes it possible for us to eat?
Yeah, very, very important to be able to feed yourself. Let's take some calls. We have Jeannie in Medford on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Rianna, Scott, and Chris.
Yeah, I was thinking of rhizome. That's a great name. A comment before my question. One year I thought I was watering purslane that came up like in late winter. Green, I go, oh, that's purslane. And I took real good care of it. Turns out it was puncture vine or goat heads. You know, that horrible
thing. Oh, right, yeah,
thing.
The ruiner of many a bicycle tire. Yeah.
Oh, or boy traps, we used to call them. My question is about an apricot tree. Pretty sure that's what I've had here for 5 years. It's still pretty young. I never grafted it. But I noticed in the winter when the leaves start falling, it looks like there's thorns. They're long and is sharp. And I wonder, do apricot trees normally have thorns?
Let us find out. Thanks for that. Scott looks like he's poised to answer this one.
Well, that actually sounds a little more like a plum tree. Those little thorns are very characteristic of plums and some of the other prunus. I have noticed small versions of that on apricots. It's distinctly possible that what you have there is a tree that had been grafted and the graft had died off and the rootstock has come out. And usually the rootstock is a choke cherry or another prunus that has really robust roots but doesn't produce particularly good fruit. So that's a possibility, particularly if the vegetation there looks like long spikes of growth coming out from the very, very base of the plant.
Prunus is the genus of the okay, so
of plums.
Okay.
Yes.
And this is a great point that at the OSU Extension Service, we have our plant clinic where we have trained volunteers to help you answer those type of questions. And so if you would like to bring in a sample of your what you think is an apricot, we would be happy to help you correctly identify it and then provide some resources about how to take care of an apricot or what you can do to take care of your fruit trees. That number is 541-776-7371. And again, that's our OSU Extension Plant Clinic. And so we can help you with some of these questions if we didn't get to it today.
And that's any weekday they can call that number?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Another call from David in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hey, good morning. Hey, a quick question. First, one comment that the Dust Bowl, I have been told, was caused by primarily the moldboard plow, basically an eastern farmers that were using a specific type of plow on the east. They came to Oklahoma, should not have used that type of plow because they didn't have the winds in the east.
Our soil scientist nodded in recognition of that. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, the other thing was, the importance of organic matter, I think all gardeners realize the importance of organic matter in the soil and building up the soil. One of the big problems I think a lot of people encounter is earthworms are tremendous, are great, but the biggest predator of earthworms are moles because they're meat eaters. And so I was wondering how you suggest of controlling moles in a field.
Okay, and quick answer because we're almost out of time. Mole control?
Gosh, well, you know, there's some really handy just traps that you can set that have no chemical, no poisons. But moles have a role to play, too, and, gosh, gophers are a lot worse.
Okay, so all kinds of critters doing all kinds of things in your land and your garden. The Winter Dreams Summer Garden Symposium from the Extension Service, what's the charge for that?
It's $40 and includes lunch.
Okay, at the Higher Education Center in Medford, Saturday 9 to 4:30. I want to thank Rihanna Symes, Scott Goode, and Chris Herold from the Master Gardeners Association in Jackson County for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange. Good to have you all here.
Thank you very much.